This month, we're talking about coming alongside children and families in crisis, both through Families Together and through foster care, and that while we are not all called to do the same thing, we are all called to do something. Marilee Bradley from Lincoln has found her something, being deeply involved in foster care, and she's joining us this morning to talk with us about foster care. Marilee, welcome back to the conversation.
Thanks for having me on. I'm so excited to be talking about this.
So you and your husband, Brandon, have been deeply involved with foster care for numbers of years now. God's put you in a position to be able to do some expressing of your heart and his heart for that area. You've kind of been an advocate, not kind of, you've been an advocate. You're a normal woman, right? You have a husband, you've got kids, you have a lot of kids.
Yes.
And I mean, you don't have degrees or certifications or, but yet you've got this thing burning in you. Why? Where'd that come from?
Man, I think some of us are a little bit born this way. I'm not saying you have to be born this way to do this, but I think this was something I kind of always felt in my heart, that God was calling me to love kids and to love kids that had needs. And I didn't know what that was going to look like, if that was going to be my biological kids, if that was going to be kids with medical needs, or what it would be. But through the course of my own education and becoming an adult, realizing there are kids in this world that need a loving family. They need a nurturing mom. And I can do that. That's something I know how to do. And being able to offer that to kids just felt like such a fulfillment of the way God had created me.
Marilee, there was a progression that God took you and your husband on to get you to the place where you took your first placement within foster care. Tell us a little bit of that journey and that progression.
We came at foster care originally via infertility, not being able to create our own biological kids. So there were a lot of options we were thinking through and praying through at that time. And I have my husband's blessing to tell this story. We went to an informational event, and I came out of there just on cloud nine. Like, yes, this is what God's calling us to do. I can feel this in my heart. This is the fulfillment of the way God made me. And I turned to my husband, and he was like, this is a terrible idea. Obviously, we're not doing this. And I remember feeling so strongly in my heart that this was how God had made me, that I remembered thinking like, well, I know we're not going to divorce over this, so I guess he's going to die, because I know that this is what we're supposed to do. And it created a very awkward tension in our marriage for a long time as we were both praying through this. And I mean, quite honestly, nagging my husband about what I thought we were supposed to do. And it actually took me saying to him, okay, here's the deal. We're not going to talk about it for a month. And I'm going to pray about it, and you're going to pray about it, and then we're going to put a date on the calendar that we're going to sit back down and talk about this together. And when we met for that date, he said, yeah, I think this is what we're supposed to do. It was beautiful that it was not me that moved his heart. It was him setting aside time in prayer and him having the pressure off a little bit of this wife telling him what he was supposed to do for him to get to that point. But I'll tell you that my prayer during that month really was that God would get us on the same page, whatever that page was, that I knew we needed to be united about it. And I'm really thankful that that's the direction God moved him, but I wanted to be open and willing that it could be a different direction for me too, and that God could be calling me to use that drive and desire in a different area if this wasn't something we could agree on.
Marilee, I was hearing you speak a few moments ago as we were talking about you and Brian's journey and just your heart, just to love kids and love hurting kids. And as I was hearing you, I was like, how many people would resonate with that? If that's so right and true and good and resonates in hearts, why do we have kids that aren't being loved on? Why do we have kids in the foster care system that need a Christ-centered home, and yet we're coming up short as a church? Like, so what's the disconnect between the rightness it feels to love a hurting kid and a lack of response for the opportunity that's in front of all of us?
Oh, I love that question. I feel like I have like 50 million answers. Actual first answer, especially when I talk to mothers, when I talk to women, the reality is they don't know that those kids exist. When you are licensed and you're waiting for a placement, then you get phone calls, and all of a sudden you are very aware of the need that exists in the world, and you have to pray over it every time someone calls and says, is this the child you could take? It breaks your heart to know those kids exist. But if you aren't licensed, No one is calling you about that. Because they haven't put themselves in a position to get that phone call, they have no idea that that need even exists. They have no idea that God would want to use them that way. The biggest issue really is that you have to take those first steps in obedience to even get to that place where you know that God could use you to do this, that you know that need exists. But I think a lot of people are intimidated about getting involved with the state. That's like a scary entity to have to work with and allow in your home. And I think a lot of people are nervous about what kids have experienced, the trauma they've gone through and what that might bring into your home and the discomfort of that, the upheaval for your family. And so people shy away from it. I love that you called me normal. It's not a word I would use to describe myself very often, but I remember when we first came into our church, that was the response when people saw us doing foster care. It was like, oh, well, you guys are so normal. If you can do this, then I bet we could do this too. And so I think it's putting yourself in those positions to see this as normalized, to see these kids as normal and just needing a family that will move people to be in that right position.
Merely as we're talking this morning, the song keeps coming to my mind, Fear is a Liar. And I think that there are some fears out there that keep people from taking the next step in responding to the heart of God for the hurting kids in our state. So talk about some of the classic fears that are lying to people and keeping them from doing something that God very well may want them to do.
The first fear that gets people is this idea that they would love this child too much and they couldn't let them go, that that would somehow wreck or ruin them. It's a process of learning that when you go through that, God is present in that moment with you to comfort you. It's amazing how God can do that, but God is not present in your worry. He's not present in your anxiety, showing you how that's all going to be worked out in the moment. So you have to step out in faith that you're going to be able to handle something like that and that God is going to help you to be able to handle something that could be extremely painful to have to love and let go. And I think people have fears that there are going to be kids in their homes that have needs they're not capable of meeting. And I think that's where you have to make sure you have an agency you're working with that can help you with that. You have a supportive community in your church that can help you. I mean, the biggest antidote to all the fear to me is actually knowing the kids. Loving them is seeing them, is getting to know other foster families and seeing, oh yeah, they're doing this. This is actually working. This could be really hard. I mean, I won't say the fears are wrong. I think the fears can be very, very truthful, but it's recognizing that God can ask you to do something that seems scary to you, and that doesn't mean it's wrong. God could ask you to do something that totally disrupts your life and takes you way out of what feels comfortable to you, and that may be exactly what you need, what your family needs, and what this child needs.
As you're talking, Marilyn, again, I'm thinking about the right response to fear in a sense where, yeah, okay, there are some legitimate concerns or fears. There's some things that could go kind of wonky on you if you're not careful. That doesn't mean you move away from it. It just means that you get those things addressed.
Yes, do it afraid. Like, be afraid and still do it. If you're waiting to not be afraid, that moment may not come. There may not be a time where you feel 100% confident that, yes, this is exactly the right time, the right place. We have everything in order for this to be easy. It's not ever going to be easy.
Merrily, one of the things that we're talking a lot about this month is we're talking about the hurting, vulnerable kids around us and the foster care system, God's heart for them and His call for us as a church to be a part of that. We're making the statement a lot that we're not all called to do the same thing, but we're all called to do something, right? And just to figure out what that something is. And so we've got an all play guide. Just from your own experience, as you think about what are some of the other places and ways that the church, the body of Christ, can be involved with these vulnerable, hurting kids?
I think whatever it is you are good at, whatever your skill set is, whatever you love to do, your hobby, your passion, you can do that for foster care. If you really love to paint a bedroom, you can do that for foster care. If you could teach a guitar lesson, if you can make a casserole, if you can provide child care, if you can do lawn care, there are so many ways. Whatever it is you can do that for foster care and for foster families. The priority should be on foster parents building relationships with their foster kids. That attachment piece, that bond is really tricky and takes a lot of intense work. So sometimes the absolute best thing the church can do is to come around those families And if you can bring them a meal, then that's time they get to spend playing a board game and building that attachment, building that bond. If you can come and mow their lawns, then that's time that they can spend reading books together and building that attachment, which is just so important for these kids' mental health, for their normalcy. I just can't say enough about how important it is for those families to be able to have time with the kids. So I think that allows us to think really big picture about what we can do for the families in our community. And I think there are also lots of good advocacy organizations that work throughout the state of Nebraska that can use volunteers. We have the Foster Care Closet that gives clothing to kids across Nebraska. We have so many organizations, Royal Family Kids Camp, that there are so many things you can do that are supporting foster kids without necessarily becoming foster parents.
Marilee, we were talking about the all play that we're challenging all of us to consider and reflect on this month, that we all can play a role in taking care of the vulnerable kids among us within the foster care system. We're also talking about all pray. We're talking about praying a simple prayer. It's a prayer we reflected in the prayer that Samuel prayed when he said, "Speak, Lord, your servant is listening." We've made a lock screen that we're encouraging anyone who's got a smartphone to download, put it on the screen, and look at it on a daily basis and be reminded to pray and ask God, "What's my something?" And then to watch how God answers that prayer.
I love that. I feel like my prayers have never been more fervent as when I have been praying for my foster kids and for their biological families, because I feel such certainty that I am praying in agreement with the Holy Spirit, that I am praying in agreement with the heart of God, because I know how deeply He loves these vulnerable children. To be able to be their voice and to be praying on their behalf to the Father is such a beautiful, powerful thing. And I love this idea of families asking what God might want them to be doing and praying about that. And I think to add to that, to be praying for the foster families that you know specifically, to set aside time to say, okay, who are the people that we know that are doing this work, or the caseworkers that you know, or the attorneys that you know, but people that are in your circle that have some kind of involvement in the foster care system. And what I say to those people when I'm shooting them an email or when I'm talking to them is to say, don't grow weary in doing good. This is an exhausting process. Foster care is exhausting. Being an advocate in the system is exhausting. And we need people who won't burn out, who are able to do this for a long time and have that experience to be able to meet the needs of these kids well. So to be intentionally praying for these families, don't grow weary, to give them strength by encouraging them with practical help, but also to be encouraging them in prayer and to let them know that you're praying for them.
Marilee, I would love to hear you speak to a person being open to God, wherever they are in the continuum of awareness of vulnerable kids in our state and the foster care system, wherever they are in the continuum of feeling potentially led in some way in that direction.
I love seeing families take just that first step of obedience. And I've seen families who come to like our Foster Stories event and they hear about the needs in the foster care community, and I feel like it makes them better equipped to go back to their churches and to be aware of what their foster families are going through. And that may be it. That may be what God asked them to do in obedience. And I'm thankful that they do that. Even if they never go through training, they never take a placement, they never get licensed, they're doing what God asked them to do, and I'm thankful for that. And I think we have other families that go through training and they're very much more aware. They might become a good respite placement, even if they never take a long-term placement, but they're doing what God asked them to do. And I'm thankful for that. I think when we set up the goal that we're all supposed to get licensed and then we're all supposed to be those people who take 80 children over the next 20 years and that that's the only way to do this thing right, I don't think that's what God has asked of all of us. There may be somebody He's asking to do that, but even that takes a first step of obedience to get there. But I think if we just say, God, I'm open to just the next step. What's the next step? Is the next step that I'm going to go bring a meal to a family? Is the next step that I'm going to go to a class? Is the next step that I read a book? I read an article? I educate myself a little bit more? What's the thing that you might be asking me to do today, right now?
We need more foster parents, right? So that is a need. But there are more people who are in position to surround foster parents than people who are necessarily called to be a foster parent. So I'd love for you to speak to those of us who are around foster parents and the difference that we could make for them.
My husband and I were fostering a couple little kids. We were a young family, and we were drowning. we were in over our heads. But we felt like, well, we chose this, so, you know, we can't ask for help. So we just kept pushing through and pushing through and pushing through. And when we got done with that season, when our cases wrapped up, we really felt like no one else should have to go through this feeling as alone as we did, feeling as unsupported as we did. And we recognized that we were unsupported because we didn't ask for support. And even if somebody asked, we couldn't get our heads above water enough to even come up with something they could do. Or we felt compelled to be like, no, it's great, this is fine. Because even for the reputation of our family or of our foster kids, we wanted people to know they were loved and that we were doing our best. We didn't want them to feel like we were just struggling and failing at this. I think sometimes there's a problem in our church communities where foster families don't feel free to ask for what they need, or there's not an understanding that they have needs. So I think for us, it's been trying to draw some awareness to speak on behalf of foster parents who may not feel in a great position to speak for themselves. So I'm thankful to do that right now. If you have a foster family in your church, they probably need help, even if they don't feel like they can say that to you. If you can reach out to that foster family and say, hey, I'm going to be praying for you this week. What specifically can I be praying for you about? And that may give you some insight into their needs. That may help them feel safe to express some things to you. That it may start with a little bit of a baby step of you just saying, we care about you and what you're doing, so that you can get that little crack in the door to be able to know what their needs actually are and they feel safe to express that.
Marilee, we talk a lot on My Bridge about God's heart and how God's redundant in Scripture about his heart for the orphan and the hurting and the vulnerable. But I don't want to take for granted that everyone actually knows what God says about that. As you think about what the Bible says about God's heart for hurting kids, where does your mind go? Where does your heart go? What verses do you go to?
So I love the passage in James that talks about religion that God our Father accepts as pure and undefiled is to care for orphans and widows in their distress. So how am I caring for orphans and widows in their distress? That's the question. I feel like it's just so beautifully black and white, which I love beautifully black and white. It makes it easy for me. And so I think that even in our hardest moments of foster care is recognizing I do this for God. I don't do this because people are going to be thankful or are going to think I'm an amazing parent. It's obviously not for the money. It is because I love and honor God. And so that has to be my why. And I think scripturally that is something I have repeated over and over to myself in the hard moments. And even now that we are not actively fostering, but working in doing more advocacy work for foster kids, that I have to keep doing this because there's not a timeline on that. It doesn't say to care for them until you've already done it for 10 years and you feel like maybe that season is over. This is an ongoing question we have to ask ourselves how we're doing with that. And I think the second half of that verse, to keep ourselves unstained by the world, I think that so obviously also applies to that caring for orphans and widows piece. Am I doing this in a way that isn't stained by the world, that isn't valuing my comfort over what I can offer to these kids, or that isn't doing it because I want praise, or in a way that is manipulative or hurtful to the families I want to serve because I'm trying to get my way in all this? It's both pieces of that verse.
Marilee, as we close our time today, I'd love for you to speak to the person who they're fairly early in the process of feeling stirred in their spirit about something about foster care and hurting kids. What would you say to that person?
I'm a researcher. So my wisdom is lean into that stirring and read. Lean into that stirring and ask people you know who are foster parents or who have some involvement in child welfare. Ask them about it. Open yourself up to hearing wisdom or to learning more, and then to be faithfully praying about what it is that God might be asking you to do. I think those are the very basic kind of steps to figure out, is this something that I'm going to be the hands and feet involved in, or is this something where I'm going to be the support team involved in? But I think getting more information, either by attending an event or by reading or by asking people who know, is the very best way to answer kind of what that stirring is and to figure out what direction God might be sending you.
Well, Marilee, we always enjoy our time with you, and we always get so much great insight. Thank you again for the many parts that you have played in caring for foster kids, and thanks for sharing with the MyBridge family so many great thoughts for how we can each do something to reflect God's heart in caring for the orphans among us.
Yeah, I am so glad to do this, and I wish everybody could know my kids. I have this conversation with you because I love my kids, and this is how God brought them to me, and he brought brought them to me not with guarantees of adoption, but with risk and with fear and trembling and with a love for their biological family. I'm just so thankful to be able to talk about this because every time I do, I think about my kids and about the families out there who could be opening up their home to kids that are absolutely as lovable and precious as my own children are. And I want those kids to have loving, supportive, nurturing families. So I'm just so thankful that you do this and that I get to be part of it.